Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm the Reverend Gene Dyschlewski. I'm a community minister here at First Unitarian. You don't see me very often on Sunday because my day job is pastor of Lime Rock Baptist Church. So I'm here during the week getting in trouble with you. It's a privilege for me to step into the pulpit once a year. So this is my big moment. And it's during legislative season because I want to talk about social justice and encourage you to take action. Now, this congregation, as you know, has been a champion of social justice for as long as it's been in existence. Our legacy goes back to when we were first gathered during the colonial period. In those days, we were a voice of human dignity. Abolition groups met here. And I think we should search the archives, but I understand that Providence churches, such as ours, were involved in the sanctuary movement when the sanctuary movement was called the Underground Railroad. We're back in business. Thank you. We hosted women's suffrage meetings here. We marched and spoke against racism. And I am pleased to have been here working with you during the legislative campaign for marriage equality. For the past 5 years, we've been working on gun regulations and criminal justice reform. And last year, we enjoyed an embarrassment of riches. We got several legislative achievements. Doesn't happen every year. The domestic violence gun bill that you supported and the criminal justice reform package that we supported was passed. So things happen. You did that. Well, my plan for today was to encourage you to participate in a letter writing project during coffee hour to advocate for sensible gun laws in Rhode Island. For the record, I am not doing the letter writing project. The youth group has taken it over. They want to show me to do it the right way. Actually, I was moved by their interest. And don't tell them this, but I got a little choked up. The torch is passed. Your kids are now involved with social justice ministry. And it was at this point I realized that I misperceive the legacy of this church. I'm looking at the actions, but the actions are symptoms of something internal. The real legacy of this church community lies in your core values. A belief in the inherent worth and dignity of every person as expressed through affirmation and compassion, this is the real driving force. We are not a collective of isolated individuals competing for importance, for things, and for space upon the earth. We are a community of people who are part of an interconnected web. As such, we are a lot more about generosity than about greed. So I think it's important that we're driven by this internal motivation. The issue we focus on tends to be the injustice of the day. We approach advocacy through the lens of our core values. Therein lies our strength. So I'm going to recommend that we add to our virtue, to our efforts at legislative ministry, one other thing. We need to address the second issue. When we can, the opportunity doesn't always come up. But we need to do some face-to-face, interpersonal, personal advocacy. See, we seem to eventually win the culture war in the legislature. By a lot of work, but we tend to win. But we also need to win the hearts and minds. There is a segment of society that just cannot adjust to social change. I was thrilled when marriage equality became the law of the land. But there's still a serious backlash of homophobia. The issue went from the wedding ceremony to the wedding cake. Now, personally, gay or straight, I have never met a wedding cake I didn't like. But there are a lot of people who just can't refuse to adjust to new things. To be fair, I think we all adjust to new things differently, and I think it has a lot to do with temperament. I identify myself as a progressive. That's not necessarily good nor bad. It's neutral. It just fits my temperament. There are people who, by temperament, are conservative, and they're more prudential and more careful about dealing with change and seeing things differently. That's neither good nor bad. It's how they are. Of course, at the fringe, there are problems. However, today, it's not that easy. The new normal, the real problem is more complicated. Spurred by political interest, right and left have become tribal, not based on temperament, but based on positions that have become politicized. For example, on the right, race, sexual orientation, immigration status, religion, used to win votes. That means that instead of supporting a position because it's a better position, folk are encouraged to support a position because it relieves anxiety and fear. That, you know what, vote for me, and we're going to make the stuff that you're afraid of go away. And usually it's after it's happened. But that's how anxiety and fear is. So my suggestion is that when we speak to someone on a personal level, our intention be relational, not informational. I suggest that we encourage them to do the talking. We don't have to convince them of the error of their ways. We just need to remain genuinely unconvinced of their position, but respectfully interested. This requires tolerance, and tolerance is in our DNA. We need to respond rather than react. And I don't mean with apathy or indifference, but we need to be non-reactive. This could turn into, and occasionally does, it turns into a productive conversation. We could learn something. It doesn't always. However, when I'm demonstrating tolerance and respect, I think it's safe to assume that these are things that cannot be learned by the lecture method. I mean, some things are that way. Who here has learned how to drive by watching a YouTube? I really believe that tolerance and civility has to be experienced. And if that's a part of what you can do, then share it. So my suggestion is that to be effective, we actually need to prepare, because some of the stuff that we'll be hearing is shaky. On the national scene, political speech has been corrupted by incivility and infected by falsehood and contempt. We've seen this play out before in 1930s Europe. Purposeful lying is upending. It is an unexpected, bold display of impudence, and it's designed to be that way. It creates a false narrative in some people. As the architect of the chaos in the 1930s in Europe, and I won't mention his name, he said, quote, he was talking about the average person, it would never come to their heads to fabricate colossal untruths, and they would not believe that others could have the impudence to distort the truth so infamously, end quote. Speech that is targeted to upend us. This is the same guy who famously said about political propaganda, quote, it must appeal to the feelings of the public rather than to their reasoning powers, end quote. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that things are the same as they were in Nazi Germany. These times are different. Our political system, I hope, is resilient. What is universal here and what is the same is that decent, ordinary folk expect the truth. And many are being misled by charlatans. And secondly, I want to acknowledge how hard it is to engage in conversation with somebody who's been duped. If you have any sense of empathy, you feel for them, right? We're being berated on a visceral level by contemptuous lies in response to tragedies. In the case of mass shootings, the response often seems to be apathy. Our public officials will say, our thoughts and prayers are with them and their families. No, they're not. That's yada yada. And it's hard to listen to immediately after a tragedy. So there are also people who believe in the false flag paranoid conspiracies, which is too perverse to even talk about in the book. When the response to the loss of innocent lives, especially children, is apathy rather than empathy, or worse, paranoid fantasy, it is monumentally upsetting. Sometimes the obscenity of the rhetoric is beyond the pale. Bottom line is, no one deserves at any age to have their lives cut short by a bullet in a church pew, in a theater, or at a schoolroom desk. So just exactly how does what I'm suggesting work? Well, the key step is to relate to someone in the other ideological camp with your compassionate, open-hearted attention. Again, this is relational. We've got to talk to people on the other side with affection. First, we need to prepare for the dissonance of their argument. If we get to talk with someone who is open-minded, that's wonderful. Otherwise, the conversations are not necessarily productive as you would expect. I find that some of the rhetoric that is used by gun enthusiasts, for example, is extreme and based on a belief system that just is not mine. So it's emotionally jarring. However, my suggested goal is to engage the opposition in a relational conversation, not an intellectual exchange. The purpose is not to convince. The purpose is to demonstrate affirmation, demonstrate civility. Affirmation satisfies a basic human need. We all need to be understood. No one expects to be perfect, but when our positive qualities are recognized, they're reinforced. And when I genuinely am attentive to somebody, it does have an impact. A frightened person probably will not be able to respond in kind. That's okay. But I do believe that affirmation is one of the antidotes for fear. Now, my experience has been that the other person needs to keep talking. about their position on whatever until they hear themselves talk. Because if I'm standing there, I'm the audience, I'm not resonating. I don't buy this, but I'm respectfully listening. It has an impact. People walk away with at least some doubt. So, what do I do if I get really agitated? Because I've heard some really wild and crazy things. I said this isn't easy to do. I would step away. When you get really agitated, step away. You don't have to continue. I do. There's no reason to get hurt, which is another thing. This has to be done with a sense of humility. That's not a failure if you have to step away. You don't know what seed you've already planted. With a sense of humility, you know, as much as I would like to present myself as, you know, the person who's changing the world, I'd like to believe I'm contributing something to sanity in the world, and that's good enough. So, we have a lot of work to do. My sense is that we're going to do it. And you're going to start after the service by writing letters in support of gun regulations. The kids are waiting for you and will greet you when we go in. Look, do me a favor, huh? Get me off the hook. I don't want the kids to come to me and say, "What did you say to them? They all went home." So, please. We need the legislation. You know, there is a saying among social justice advocates that one snowball gets through hell each year. Last year, we got two. And I really wanted the governor to sign it. But this year, I would like to invite you after the service to go next door and engage in making snowballs. Are you with me?
Yes.
Thank you.